I'm so excited to hear about the bike.
I'm so excited too.
Welcome to Responsible Disruption, the podcast that takes you on a captivating journey through the realm of social innovation and design. I'm your host, Sydney Johnson, and today we're talking with Julia McGregor, the host of University of Calgary's Now Innovating podcast. It's a podcast crossover episode. Julia is a senior specialist in the Office of the Vice President, Research at the University of Calgary, and a seasoned communicator with a passion for crafting compelling narratives. As the host of the Now Innovating podcast, Julia uncovers the journeys of University of Calgary researchers as they propel their discoveries forward from conception to implementation, ultimately creating impactful change. Julia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sydney. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with the obvious question. Can you tell us about the Now Innovating podcast? What's it about?
Oh, well, for those who like podcasts, but also, you know, want to watch a video version of things, I have expanded it. So it's not just a podcast anymore. It's a digital series because I took over this lovely podcast from an ex-broadcaster. You might know him, Jordan Witzel. He used to be on, you know, Global Weatherman, really funny guy. He was in my role before me. He started this whole series with Pritma, who is a nurse entrepreneur. They did 46 or 36 episodes in a short time. And then Jordan went to med school and then I got his job. And I was like, well, I can't just in good conscience take over a podcast focusing that, you know, someone who actually knows what broadcasting is does, right. You know, some big shoes to fill. So I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make this harder on myself and, you know, make it like a video forward chat show, but we also release it as a podcast. So it's really exciting because I think it's increasing the accessibility of it. So you can kind of see some of the cool stuff that these researchers are doing, if it's like tech, or you can see the lab side things as well. Also if like people, you know, need captions, we have that component, but it's a really fun journey. And it's just exciting to chat with people that are way smarter than me every time.
Yeah. Right. I know the feeling. Yeah. That's awesome. So yeah, by the way, just for our listeners, everything will be in the show notes, so you'll be able to have a link to those videos and, of course, the podcast episodes from Now Innovating. What kind of person do you think would be interested in Now Innovating? Like, what are they going to hear if they go there?
If you're interested in, like, understanding how research really can be moved to make an impact. So if like you're interested about starting your own company or commercializing your discoveries, or even really what does that process entail, or what are the importance of partnerships and steps you have to take along the way there, learning about different resources that are available to support innovators and entrepreneurial thinkers in the university and the Calgary community abroad, like that is I think you'd be interested in that. Or if you just like learning cool things. Like I've learned so much like doing the show alone. Yeah. I didn't know a lot of things about energy, and now I can talk about some things that are energy related.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Yeah. I completely relate. I think it's obvious to the audience perhaps why we're doing this crossover.
Yeah, exactly.
Episode. You're deeply immersed in the world of translating research into stories, you know, impact, but also you're telling the story of what happened.
Yeah.
How do you see storytelling as a catalyst for connecting academia to broader audiences?
I think the storytelling is important because I think a lot of academics too, like even seeing themselves as innovators in the first place, like recognizing that what they're doing is innovation or what they're doing is important. Cause I think they get so head down into the day-to-day work sometimes that they don't realize really this does have an impact and you could translate it out here, or like people should know about the great work that you're doing. Cause sometimes they think it's just boring. Like I was like, no, like let's like your journey and like your experiences and what you've gone through to do this is so interesting to people. So I love that. Like we're just trying to get an more accessible audience out there to like learn about research and like what it can do for people.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just as much about the researcher as it is about the community.
Exactly.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Can you give us an example of how academic research can evolve into impact, like getting to the meat of it?
Yeah, so I'm going to use probably examples of people I've talked to on Now Innovating because obviously they're fresh in my mind and you know I've talked to them a bit. So there's a couple really cool examples. Kathy Sitter, she's a faculty member in social work, and her research is all about multi-sensory storytelling. Mm. So how can you make research more accessible by involving people, you know, if they are like neurodivergent, or you know you have vision issues, or you know you're like, just how can you actually incorporate these storytelling into pieces? Because, you know, a lot of research is like, fill out a survey or just do a normal interview. So how can we capture these experiences and show them differently? So she's got funding to build this whole beautiful, brand new multi-sensory storytelling studio that has like different, ways to capture this piece. So that's like really cool and tangible that she's just gone through here, and she's done work with like, with youth, other members of the community to just bring this out. So her work is really excellent, and she's a star. So I have an episode talking to her if you want to learn more about multisensory storytelling. Another cool one is from the Faculty of Arts. These researchers have developed sensors to detect methane emissions. Okay. Methane you can't see or smell, right, or like no one, like it's like this deadly, or not deadly, but you know, it's really contributing to climate change in this piece. Right. So they have developed sensors in arts, and they've licensing this technology out to companies to like actually drive around sites and like tell them where they're where there's methane leaks, and everything they do is always still connected to a research project. So they're training students, they're taking that data back to their lab, they're refining the sensors, having that actual day-to-day impact of, you know, helping companies, you know, try to figure out where these like methane leaks are that are happening in their processes and stuff. So those are two quick things there that I'm like is really neat, and they're going on.
Yeah, I mean, I love how you gave me tangible examples as well to that question.
Examples are nice.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it also feels like those are, in my mind, those are world-class examples too. Mm-hmm. Like if there's no technology that currently exists to kind of sense that methane, in that methane example, for example, like that's really, really exciting.
It's super cool. And like, I think it's very important to, like, I am showcasing these researcher stories on the show, that it's not always just, it's a tangible, it doesn't have to be a technology. It's like, are you creating a service? Like, so what Dr. Sitter's doing too is like a way to like, you know, an innovation and actually capturing research stories. Like that's amazing. And that's like fantastic social innovation. And where the Pomelo is actually the group of their company for the methane researchers, like they're like what they're doing too, like it's very tangible tech, but again, bringing back to research. So like, it's not just, like, so yeah, it can be service oriented, it can be technology oriented, it can be policy oriented, like all these different avenues to, you know, create impact.
Yeah, that's a great point, is that something that I say a lot, I'm sure I've said it on this show, is innovation isn't just technology or digital. Yeah. It also exists in all these other places. Like policy is a great example of something that people don't often think about. Mm-hmm. One way that academic research is often measured, or like the impact or success, is through publications. Can you talk about that a little bit? What's your opinion there?
Oh yeah, that's definitely a piece in all academia, right? Like that, that's where that ivory tower mentality comes from. That like just academics are just creating knowledge, and only other academics can use it, and no one can do this piece. So at like the University of Calgary, we've signed on to the San Francisco Declaration on Research Impact. So this is actually a kind of global initiative to like look at other ways to assign impact in hiring practices of faculty, so promotion that way. So not just like, oh, I published in Nature or these other high impact journals, and like that's what's giving value to the researcher. It's like also looking at like, how are you engaging with community in your research and these pieces. So yeah, just not assigning to just like, oh, I published in this really high impact journal, and that's all the value that I have as a researcher. So that's very exciting to that, like looking for actual value to communities and evaluating researchers' outputs in different ways than just, yeah, it's in a journal now. Cool. Let's hope we read it.
Yeah, exactly.
Systematic review listing at some point.
yeah. And especially because some journals are behind a paywall, like you're not going to, the community might not necessarily access.
Oh yeah, the
pay
to play for publishing itself is just ridiculous.
It's a little tricky.
Yeah, we want to get into that as another thing. But yes,
that's a whole other podcast episode, perhaps. What are other ways to measure impact, like that you've been exploring or that you're really excited about?
Oh, that's a good question. So, yeah, other than like how actually are you translating or bringing your research to the community or the people that could use it? So are you making it accessible? Like, I know another way too is just like, are you going out and actually telling people about what you're doing? Like, if you found this amazing evidence-based thing that's going to help healthcare policy and practice, like, can we go out there? So is it looking at presentations? Sure. Is it the storytelling, things like this? Is it going on our shows of our podcasts and telling people about it? And I think creating like awareness to those pieces, I think that's another great way to measure impact. But I think just, really that, again, like, how are we influencing policy? How are we influencing practice? How are we changing? How are we getting our research out there to the people that it matters to most and that they understand what the research is?
Yeah, translating it in a way that makes sense. It sounds like there's a lot of possibilities there that, you know, we don't even know yet exactly all the ways that can happen. Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned before, innovation looks different in different fields and goes across, transcends several fields.
Yes.
In your experience, how does the nature of innovation vary between those disciplines? Are there common threads? Are there vast differences?
Yeah, I think, and I think that's a point too, I want to say, like, on Now Innovating too, it's like, I'm not just talking to researchers from medicine or science, mm-hmm. right? Like how you're recognizing innovation in other faculties, like the social work example or the Faculty of Arts. I think it is a challenge because STEM-based innovation is obviously what is really talked about the most, right? Like, I've discovered a new drug. I've made this cool computer software thing that does this. But it's like, again, what are those service-based frameworks that can be applied to community to support them and organization development, even like access, again, like understanding like the data that exists for people to inform their own policy and practice. So I think that's like, I had a conversation in one of my episodes with Sandra Davidson, who's the Dean of Nursing, mm-hmm. and a lot about just getting even working nurses to recognize that they are innovators too,
right.
and they're seeing day-to-day things that need to be changed and addressed in their practice, right? Mm-hmm. And so you got those people on the front lines that they know change needs to happen, and like, how can they change what's due, like enhance that practice or that procedure, or like find a solution. So I think that's a thing too. They're not recognizing that they are innovators in that space, because that's a piece, like in traditional academia too, right? It's not, you don't get a faculty position like, okay, great, like now you gotta innovate, and you gotta teach, and you gotta research, you gotta do all this stuff. A lot of this is off the side of the desk, right? So it's kind of trying to create that culture at the University of Calgary too, mm-hmm. for people to allow the time and offer resources and to them to actually understand what that means to move in the innovation process, or to be entrepreneurial.
Mm-hmm. How important is fostering that innovation mindset in an academic institution like the university?
Absolutely huge. Like, it's so huge. It is just like, and that's what I do, like the storytelling too, is just like people to recognize like, hey, that person's doing that. I'm doing something. Hey, like I'm a postdoc. Like I'm also doing something cool like this. Like maybe mm-hmm. I should look at these resources to support me, to give me more training, in understanding what the innovation process is, or what steps do I need to take, or if I want to like license my technology or my invention, or I want to make a startup company, or I want to even just like understand how to get this to the community, like what are the steps I need to take. And a lot of this pieces that we do, so we have a huge ecosystem of innovation mm-hmm. supports at the university, so including those program training pieces. There's an Evolve to Innovate program, which is for people who are just kind of like getting the idea of like, so it's like a, I think it's a 6-week program. They're going to, I'm probably misquoting my own program. I don't run it.
All good.
But the Evolve to Innovate program, so it's meant for people that are kind of just like research staff, graduate students, faculty members, and we're kind of like, I think I have something here that could be an innovation. Like what are, and so it's going through like a structured, like this is what all this process looks like. But also looking at that from a social innovation lens, we have a bunch of mentorship pieces too. So there's a Translate Research to Action, which is actually a really hands-on pilot program that my colleague Tara is leading, who's the manager of the Social Innovation Initiative in the Office of the Vice President of Research. And her colleague at the Social Innovation Hub, Joanna, are doing an amazing work just like mentoring one-on-one with these faculty members, like how to actually move, again, how to create a social enterprise and like how to do it. Because some of these theses are so, again, like STEM commercialization-driven pathways. And mentorship is huge. There's several programs too where you've got faculty mentors, the Academic Entrepreneurs in Residence is a piece where they're all faculty members that have started companies and they've had learnings, and they mm-hmm. like do very like dedicated one-on-one mentorship with these teams that come in who are again looking to translate research-driven evidence to aid a solution piece. Like, super, super huge and cool. So it's really, again, making people feel comfortable in wanting to pursue innovation in the first place. Like, because you don't know what it is, and you're like, that sounds fancy.
Exactly. That sounds outside of my wheelhouse. I just want to do my research.
Yeah.
I just want to, do the thing that maybe I'm more comfortable with.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, it's always like, how can we, building that comfort and culture, recognition of what you're doing as innovation is the first step. I find that's like, and then where do you go from there? Because it is such a complex ecosystem.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's like, first you have to recognize yourself as an innovator, and then the university supports are there to help you with step two, which is, okay,
where do I go?
I believe you. Now what?
Yes, please help me.
Yeah, so I'm super interested because, the University of Calgary is known for innovation. This is a podcast about social innovation. And I know that United Way has collaborated with the University of Calgary on among many things, you seed and you did a podcast focused on that. So maybe you can tell listeners a bit about what UCED is.
For sure. Yeah. So UCED is actually really unique in Canada. It's a series of early stage investment funds that are backed by philanthropic support at the University of Calgary. And then it's managed by Innovate Calgary, which is our tech transfer office there. So there are 6 funds to help, you know, really bridge research to business. Investments range from like $30,000 to $300,000. And there's funds including the Social Impact Fund, which is, you know, really that's made possible by the generosity of the United Way of Calgary and area, really. And that's like looking at, you know, creating, supporting social finance, supporting a growing system of social purpose organizations, you know, who are, you know, really focused on creating positive change in our communities. And that's the Social Impact Fund. So I spoke with Lorian, who is the CEO of LifeMD, which is, so Lorian used to be a research manager at the University of Calgary for part of this like large research collaboration looking at digestive diseases and those pieces. And she's collaborating with 2 physicians, and they've taken this evidence that they have, and they have like created their own online social enterprise platform to help patients or help guide people who do have like digestive issues and pieces and understanding like diet plans and actually talking to real, you know, physicians and healthcare providers and dietitians and customized meal plans and stuff like that. So it's really cool. And they have received investment from the UCED Social Impact Fund.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me how, you know, I can imagine that maybe you knew a little bit about UCED before, but then you do a podcast episode like this and you learn so much more. Is that true?
So much more. Like, 'cause I don't know a lot about investment too. So even just like learning. So I talked to Lorian and from the side of her social enterprise and then chatting with the people that operate and manage UCED in Calgary. And it's like, oh, you're business folks and you know what's up. Just even the appropriate language of like received investment rather than like, oh, they've got money. Because I keep thinking of it as like a fund, right? Like as like, you know, like research grant money. But no, it's like it's a proper investment. And they apparently the UCED, Lorian spoke about this a lot too from her experience of receiving investment from UCED. The whole UCED team is fantastic. And it's not just like, okay, you've gotten your investment, you're out the door, we're leaving you behind. Like they are like, again, like very hands-on and help offer mentorship and like helping you reach your next goals on your like investment journey for receiving more funds.
But amazing. They want you to be successful.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not just like, okay, here you go. Checkbox. Like,
I think that's something also I've observed about the Calgary ecosystem too, is like, it is very supportive. It is very, you know, wanting to help others to achieve their goals with their different social enterprises or whatever it may be.
Definitely.
Or their research and impact of that research. Exactly. Well, I think one of the really interesting things about our conversation, Julia, and being able to have you on this episode is that we both have innovation-related podcasts. And so I thought it might be fun to give the listeners a little bit of a glimpse into what it's like to have a podcast like this and maybe what some of the different things that you've experienced of being a host. So maybe you can share an example of a time when, you know, there was spontaneity in a podcast episode that you did and it led to an interesting place.
Like, you know, you prepare your questions and like sometimes the things that they just say that you're like, wait, I didn't even know this, 'cause I do so much background research in all my guests and there's only how much can you find, what do they have that's public? And then I love just finding that like kernel and then like going off on, well, not a tangent, a good tangent, but you know, like just like just do a deep dive more. Like I didn't know they engaged in this program, or like talking to someone that's like, oh, I didn't realize like you were really successful in this pitch competition at one point, or like, or just all your learnings, or like, hey, I secretly like am actually a serious play like Lego facilitator.
Exactly.
Like one of my previous guests too, which we got to play with Lego later, which is also really fun.
That works well for the video format too, I can imagine.
You know, it's very nice, you know, seeing all the cool stuff. But like a lot of it too, like you find like you have the discussion first and you're trying to really understand the research, and then I'll go into the lab and all of a sudden I'll see what they're actually doing, and then and that really just helps me understand and how to tell their story better too, and like really understand the impact of what their work can do, and like the amazing postdocs and graduate students that are all like supporting these faculty as well. Like it's just like, it's such a great ecosystem.
It doesn't matter how much research I do on someone, I'll figure out something new in the conversation.
Yeah.
Which I think is the point.
Or a lot of times when I realize I can't say some words that are especially like more research terms, or like I did one episode where I was like, he does photovoltaics. Like, I can't even say it still. And I was trying to do it, like do the intro of the episode. I kept saying the word wrong. And my guest, he's Brazilian. His English is better than mine. He's only been in Canada 2 years. And he's like, no, you're going to say it this way. And I'm like, I can't even say the subject of our whole episode right now. So just, you know, embarrassing. But I think it made him feel better too. Of like,
yeah,
feeling less like this, like, oh no, this hostess, you know, she can fail too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's comfortable. And
yeah,
and
we all make mistakes.
In the same way that anyone can be an innovator, you know, anyone can definitely be on a podcast.
Yes, exactly.
What are some of your favorite topics that you've covered, things that you really have enjoyed doing with the series?
So I think part of this was coming out of my comfort zone too, because previously, like, I worked for 10 years in like health research, communications, and then now coming to like a series where I'm talking about all innovation that's not just life sciences piece. So really, I think I mentioned to you, like, talking about energy, like, we were supporting content leading up to the Global Energy Show last year, and I went and did these like mini kind of energy burst episodes. So I went to go talk to the guy with the organic solar printed solar cells, really cool, talking to another group where they're looking at like clean, like using green hydrogen and like, you know, creating better battery life pieces. They like, these are things that I didn't know anything about. There's so many amazing innovators. That's really what it is. It's just, I didn't know anything about energy, and now I know a little bit more about it.
Yeah, now you know a little bit about energy.
I know there's a thing called pink hydrogen.
Well, I didn't know that, so absolutely. And yeah, it does highlight something I think that's important to do with this kind of work as well, is bring that understanding of, you know, you hear something that's like a top line, like carbon capture, and you're like, yeah, that's perfect, but it's actually much more complex, you know, good or bad. And I think that's true of most innovations, that there's the exciting highlight side, and there's also the, like, what does it mean to get there, and what is maybe the negative consequences of that too. And shows like yours can help tease a little bit of that out, I can imagine.
Yes.
Do you have any episodes coming up that you're really excited about?
Well, actually, so I'm recording tomorrow. So there's this program at the Hunter Hub for Entrepreneurial Thinking called the Summer Accelerator. So it's kind of, again, like, if you kind of got a startup kind of dedicated, again, like over the summer, they give you some investment money, you have office space, and they're giving you programming. So I'm talking to three folks who have companies that were part of that last year.
Oh, amazing.
And one is carbon capture. It's actually really cool because they're that same molecular, I'm saying the wrong thing, it's MOFs, but like using it for breweries. So so they can reuse the energy for in brewing production, and also, you know, like stop the carbon that's coming out of that.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, very cool. A guy who has developed his own like antimicrobial and has started his own company, so looking at antibiotic resistance and you know helping health there, and
still very important.
Yes,
in 2024.
Still very, very important. And then another company that, you know, they've it's looking at flow of pipeline monitoring, I think, of like how the gas. So I'm going to learn more tomorrow for sure, but I'm excited for that episode. Yeah, going and just like
seeing where they are now.
Exactly.
Post this program.
Exactly. Yeah. Like they're all, it's all really cool. Again, like all the research and coming out of here is just, I'm always in shock of like all the cool stuff that's going on, but I can't even keep it all in my head.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe that is a good segue into my next question, which is, what role do you think that those conversations play in uncovering those insights or fostering innovation and keeping that going?
Oh, I think it's good reflection on them too, because I think when I'm chatting with them and asking them about like, well, where are you on your journey now? And like, really, what has surprised you the most? And like, when you started this, when you were like, oh, hey, I had this research and now I'm like, you know, I now have a startup company. Like, what was like the biggest thing you didn't expect to happen, right? You're like, that's a huge shift. Again, we can't like, these people are doing this a lot of time off the side of their desk, right? Or they're just new grads that like finished their PhD and now they're like, okay, now I'm going to use this and move forward. So I think that like, yeah, just that kind of, again, that self-reflection for themselves to like be like, hey, you know, I've really accomplished a lot. Like,
yeah,
this is really cool. And again, helping them kind of get the key points of their story that I think will be really applicable to others to like learn from their own journeys too.
Yeah. And people care.
Yeah. People care.
They're interested in you.
Yeah.
And what you're doing.
Yeah. And I think I always hear this often when I interview guests, because like asking about partnership, and partnerships are so key in all of these ventures, really like finding the right partners. And we're talking about how supportive Calgary is, and even outside of the innovation Calgary ecosystem, like the Calgary, like Platform Calgary, there's lots of pieces like Social Impact Lab, like there's all these great partners that exist that can support you moving forward, and so many other like funding ventures to like move you forward. So it's all very exciting.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. want to also try with this episode, I thought it would be fun for us to play a little innovation-related game.
Oh,
because I get to use you as a bit of a guinea pig with some podcast experience, and so we're going to try something different. Julie and I have each prepared two truths and a lie related to innovation, innovation-related statements. I don't know what hers are, and she doesn't know what mine are, but we hope you'll play along with us as we try to figure out where is the lie in the statements that we're going to say. So, Julia, why don't you start? I'll see if I can pick out the lie.
For sure, and I hope I haven't, like, cheated by, like, including one of these statements because, you know, here we go. But all right.
All right, we'll see. I'll be the judge of that.
We'll see. Okay, first statement. Innovation is simpler than you think and not just synonymous with invention. UCalgary is the number one startup creator among research institutions in Canada for 3 years running. And innovation is a linear process.
Oh, well, I think I know this one. Maybe pause for the audience. Get your guesses in. Say it out loud. I can hear you in my head. I believe three is the lie.
That's correct. Yes. Innovation is definitely not
not
a,
linear.
Not a linear process. No.
Yeah. That's very cool about the university, though. I didn't know that. Can you repeat that?
You know, just, you know, the number one startup creator among Amazing. Research institutions, you know, 3 years running, you know, take that on Ontario.
Casual. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, gotta put in that, you know, that key message there.
Yeah. It's very, I mean, it just goes back to what we were saying before about the Calgary community mm-hmm. for, like, really cares about these startups and really cares about innovators. And of course, to the first statement, the first thing I thought of too was that, yeah, it everyone's an innovator in different ways. Like, yes. Getting started is so much simpler, and most people are already there. They just don't have that mindset yet.
Exactly.
Awesome. Okay. I took a slightly different tack with how I was thinking about these innovations. I did more of a historical one versus, like, related to the Social Impact Lab or the university. So we'll see. If you can suss it
out. I'm a little nervous. I've been playing a lot of Baldur's Gate, and so I feel like I'm going to fail this, like, history check on my die roll here. So
that's okay. Well, we'll see. It's not a perfect thing, but these are more about innovations of times past.
Okay.
So, first statement: the Slinky was originally designed for military purposes.
Ooh.
Number one. Number two, relevant to certainly a lot of how we do our practice in the Social Impact Lab, Post-it notes were initially developed as a solution to prevent hymn markers from falling out of books. So it was a low-tech adhesive that allowed for easy removal without damaging the pages.
Oh my goodness.
That's number two. And number three, almost 20 years before the iPad, Apple released a similar product that had a touchscreen capability and was portable.
Oh my, I hope the audience is doing better at this than I am. Yeah. Like, I think I'm just kind of gullible sometimes.
Yeah. So I'm like, wow. You're like, wow, those are all great facts.
That sounds so cool. That sounds cool. I would feel like it would be the Apple one because I'm thinking just touch screen before, like, but Palm Pilot, no. Like, I want to believe the Slinky is cool. I don't know how the military, that was a statement. Maybe yes. The military wouldn't use
Designed
it.
Designed for military purposes, the Slinky.
Actually, maybe it is the Slinky. Is that the lie?
That one is actually true.
What?
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go through
that. Okay. Is the lie the Apple, though?
No.
No. What? I am retiring from innovation.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe the lie is actually the Post-it notes. But it's a common misconception that that's what it was designed. It was actually, they were trying to make a really strong adhesive, and they failed.
Oh.
And then that's how we got the Post-it note, because they were like, actually, this is decent application for something else. Thank you to the makers of the original Post-it note, because
3M,
I use them
yeah.
all the time. Yeah, 3M. 3M, absolutely. Thank you for that.
Sponsor this podcast.
Yes, exactly. Go for it. The Slinky was invented by a man named Richard James, who envisioned it as a stabilizing device for ship equipment. And then it just became a children's toy instead, because...
Ship equipment.
Would
that be in the Navy instead of the military, though?
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I think that's related.
You've led me astray. And yeah. I definitely wouldn't
it's
have gotten
the Navy,
it.
But
it,
yeah.
Yeah, I would have 100% gotten it if you'd said the Navy.
Yeah, exactly. And then for the Apple product in 1993, Apple released the Apple Newton, which was halfway between a computer and an electronic organizer, I should say. But customers weren't ready for it, and it failed as an innovation. Yeah. And then, you know, in 2010, I think, we got the iPad. It's a lot of the same concepts, but it took off. So
it was ready.
Like, yeah. I think there's a lesson in there about setting out to do one thing and then something else actually happens. Yeah. And that's also, like, speaks to the non-linear part of innovation that you were talking about earlier.
Definitely. Or having to go back and reiterate, or you're, you know, jumping ahead. Like, it's not... Sometimes sometimes people are so solution focused rather than like addressing the problem focused too. And I think that's where sometimes people like
absolutely
stutter and fall, because they're just like, oh, I've got the greatest solution, but they haven't talked to anyone.
Yes, or, exactly.
Like, would people use this? Like the slinky. No, I don't know if it was doing a slinky thing, but.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure exactly why it didn't work as a stabilizing device, but then it had this whole other application that, you know, Mr. James probably didn't consider when he set out to do it. But exactly. Maybe that's a good. Something to leave everybody with is, even if you think that you have a great idea, or even if you think that you don't have a great idea, going through the innovation process isn't necessarily about making sure that that idea is the one or what have you. It's about coming up with a solution to a problem, and there's lots of ways that can happen, and there's a whole process and people who do this all the time that can help you through it. Yes. So yeah. Julia, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights into the world of research and innovation. Listeners, if you've enjoyed this conversation, be sure to check out the Now Innovating podcast and show.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. And I really have to acknowledge my co-producer, Cody Coates, who does Now Innovating with me. It is not a one-person operation for sure. And much like how you have Lynn helping you here, I could not do this without Cody. So thank you, Cody Coates. And yeah, please check out Now Innovating. And thanks for having me.
Perfect. Yes, thank you again. Shout out to Cody. And also for listeners, you can look for more episodes of Responsible Disruption wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time. That's all for today's episode of Responsible Disruption. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you found the conversation valuable. If you did, don't forget to follow, rate, and share wherever you get your podcasts. To stay up to date on future episodes and show notes, visit our website at thesocialimpactlab.com or follow us on social media. And until next time, keep on designing a better world.